Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host. Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat number 69. This is Michael Loff, along with Mr. Joe Steinkamp. The date is September 16, 2010. Tonight is a topic that is near and dear to Joe's heart. He's been playing with these bad boys for over 30 years. Handheld video magnifiers, or at least video magnifiers. How have they changed in the last 30 years, Joe? I mean, I assume they were much bulkier. I remember my friend in 84, he had this big clunky thing, and he had to scroll around this little mini desk thing and get the camera lined up with the documents. So I assume there's been quite a bit of modernization, miniaturization, all that good stuff that's kind of come into play here.
This is so true. We're going to talk a little bit about some tips for choosing the right video magnifier, and we're going to focus on smaller magnifiers in this podcast, which would be the ones that you can carry in your pocket or the ones like Michael described that we can take from place to place. And they have kind of changed over the years. Michael isn't kidding. I've been using video magnification since 1979, actually. And in that time, they have gotten smaller. One of the first units that I ever used was an Apollo laser unit that actually had legs that folded out and a camera that could actually tilt in many different directions. And it was a black and white tube TV with a little lamp that was on a gooseneck that you could actually aim around. And altogether, it was about 37 pounds. And on the very front of it, in big, bold letters, it dared you to say portable. And I used to put tape over it and call it luggable. Because at 37 pounds, it was hard to imagine that it was portable. But in the early 80s, I took that thing to class. I took that thing on carts. It went on trips. And back then, I thought it was just, you know, Star Trek. It was amazing technology at the time. And, you know, it was actually one of the first ways that I had done word processing. And by that, I meant I put a big Smith Corona typewriter under there, then aim the camera down at it, and then I would look occasionally at what I was typing if I needed to use a correction tape or something like that. So it has changed over the years. I've used video magnification in various forms on jobs that I've worked with in retail and through broadcasting. I also then used it in technical support. But for the last 10 years, I've used it in vocational rehabilitation, and that's where things have really gotten interesting, because it was around that time that things got smaller, and the first handhelds that came around 2003, 2004 started to emerge, and it really changed the industry in that you could have one of these guys in your pocket and be able to read menus and read receipts as you were getting them or read the backs of things. We look at the barcode scanners now on the different smartphones, and I can remember my first excitement just being able to read the back of a box of cereal in the grocery store to figure out what free prize was inside. So it really has changed, Michael.
Well, also coming up, we have some pre-recorded interviews. We had a chance to speak with Ted Judge with HumanWare, and we also spoke with Mark Stenzel with Enhanced Vision, and they'll talk about their line of products. So when you say handheld, I assume this is in the kind of 1.8 to 5-inch range, and of course you got the midline units from 7 to 12, and then you got the 15-inch plus units. So in the handheld space, really, I mean, what should we be looking for? I assume different people have different needs as to what they're going to do with the magnification, whether they're going to school or if they're doing work outside or doing things in a more of a darker room. So really, what should we be looking for when deciding which portable magnifier is for us?
Well, you know, you hit your finger right on it. It is kind of a personal experience. Everybody is going to want something kind of different. Whether you're in school, you might want something that's a little bit more portable or rugged. If you're working in an office environment, you might want a screen that's a little brighter. Size is important, though, because that would change this device from being something that's kind of spot reading, like you're just going to read something rather quick, like a price. Or if you're going to read something more long-term, like if you were in class and you wanted to follow along while other people were reading in a book, or you were trying to concentrate on math problems. And that's where it really does matter, where you have to make a decision on how much do I want to carry, how big of a screen do I really need, and how much will this affect me when I'm carrying it from place to place, or when I'm going from place to place? And will I get eye strain if I get a smaller screen? Do I then cause myself some problems by staring at it or straining when trying to read text for longer periods of time? So size can be a very important factor, and you want to think about that when you're looking at what works best for you and how much you want to carry.
Well, do different, it may not be this simple, but different eye diseases require different types of magnifiers to handle that, or is it just come down to visual acuity, or what?
That's a really good question. Some of the manufacturers actually make video magnifiers for a certain type of eye condition. So one particular brand may be shooting for diabetic retinopathy. Another one may be shooting for glaucoma. Another one may have found that in their test that retinitis pigmentosa works better with their particular brand of magnifier. And where that comes into place is that some will put a different color scheme in there, or they'll actually have a brighter screen for some issues where they found in others with diabetic retinopathy that they have to have blue and yellow, or yellow on blue, which are usually the color hues you will see the most when you start seeing what's called false colors when you go to look at a video magnifier. And that's one of the features that we'll hear about in the interviews for sure coming up.
So brightness and contrast of the display, kind of explain those and how they vary between units.
It really is a difference. It sounds like it's the same word, but it's not. There are units out there that allow you to adjust the brightness of the picture. And by that, I mean it actually does get physically brighter. So it goes from being dim to being very bright. There are also the other units out there that allow you to adjust contrast. And that looks like it's making it darker, but it's actually putting a filter on it to adjust the way that text looks. And that can actually make a difference. There are some actually out there that allow you to turn the lights of the video magnifier off in order to look at it, say, without distracting others in a dark room. So if you were in a classroom environment and you were going to watch a PowerPoint presentation, some people might actually be distracted by the lights that are coming off of the video magnifier. So you could actually turn the lights off. And some magnifiers allow you to still see somewhat in low-level lighting. So having the ability to control the light and the contrast can affect you in a great deal.
Now, something mentioned was the color of the bezel having something to do with the glare effect, right?
Yeah, that's true. The units themselves come in different types of colors. They are usually darker in color around the bezel. And what I mean by that is the plastic that goes around the actual screen that you're looking at. And that can be a big deal, because if you have someone who has glare issues, or I'm glaucoma and I have a nystagmus, so I'm attracted to the brightest light source in the room. I'm very much like a moth to a flame. So when I go to look at a magnifier and it has kind of a cream color bezel or a white bezel, my eye may actually drift and look at the brighter image of the bezel rather than looking at the actual text on the screen. So for some people, that can be a big issue. And so they may choose one that has a darker color that will allow them to focus directly on where the print is. And that can be a very helpful thing, unless you can control your lighting environment. That is a big issue, too, because if you're in darker environments, you might not notice that the around it is silver or very reflective.
So does a larger display in and of itself increase glare issues?
Yeah, it really does. What can happen is that some people will find themselves needing a larger screen to be able to see the text more at one time. So when people are looking at a larger screen, they might say, okay, I'm trying to get the whole page on this screen. And that's sometimes not possible, especially if you start enlarging it to, you know, 4, 6, 8, 12x, what have you. And then what ends up happening is that they do choose the larger screen, but when they go to look at black text on a white background, it's too bright. the glare gets at them, and then we kind of call it a snowblind effect. And so that person then is squinting, which is then taking away from the ability to see the text at higher magnification. So you kind of have a snake swallowing its own tail, and you're not getting anywhere. And these people may actually have grown up with seeing black text on a white background for so long that they might not be able to see alternate colors like green on a black background or yellow and black nearly as well. And sometimes that'll work and sometimes it won't. The other thing is that when you're looking at these guys, but like you were saying earlier, with the 1.8 inches and all the way up to 15 inches, finding out that sweet spot, that magic size, is really important because it does affect the way that you're going to see this text. And so you want to play with these if you get an opportunity, which I highly suggest that if you're considering getting a video magnifier, you should always get a demonstration of it. Don't buy online. Don't buy a catalog. Always go see the unit and always see it in different ways. Turn the lights on and off. Put different types of text under the camera. So if you're looking at a textbook, or that's primarily what you look at, well, you might want to look at photos too, because you never know when you want to look at your grandmother's photos or the family album. The same thing also goes for when you're going to look at, say, a magazine. Remember that magazines and newspapers are printed very badly and very cheaply. So putting those under the video magnifier, especially if you're looking at it on the smaller screen, can help you a great deal in deciding what is going to work best for you and the model and the size and the color, especially the glare, that will help you choose the right one that really meets your needs. And remember, it's wants versus needs. You really need something and you may want a feature, but if you can see the screen in other ways, that really should take the lion's share of your reasoning for choosing a product.
Does a larger screen reduce battery life, or what is the typical battery life? I keep hearing like 2.5 to 3 hours, but what can we expect?
That's about right, actually. Generally, in the, let's say, the 5-inch units, it's around that 2.5 hour to 4 hour battery life. Now, when looking at these units, and you're looking at the larger screens, you may notice that they have removable batteries. And that's very helpful, especially if you travel a lot, if you're on the go and going to various hotels, or you do presentations, or you're a student and you want to get through more than just a Tuesday-Thursday class. You want to get through 2 or 3 Tuesday-Thursday classes. Then having the ability to slide in another battery will make your life so much easier, because depending if you've left this on from start to finish, it can drain rather quickly. Now, if you're looking at various things throughout the day, let's say I went to the grocery store earlier, but now I'm in the library, and now I'm going to go over to Best Buy and look at some CDs, then it might last a little longer because it's actually turning on and turning off, and the cycle seems to allow the unit to go a little further than that. It's hard to judge, of course, because you're not actually sitting there with a stopwatch to decide, okay, that was 42 minutes. But it does seem to work a little differently. And so when looking at these larger screens, it's very important to consider the battery life, or does it have a removable battery? So that way, if you need to swap that out in a critical situation, you can.
Now, there seem to be two different technologies for actually capturing an image. Maybe you're at a restaurant and you want to capture the menu and then just enlarge it, or you're in a store and you want to take a snapshot of a product high up on a shelf. So some companies use what's called freeze frame, and other magnifiers use what are called snapshot. Why don't you explain the difference between these two features so people can decide which is best for them? Hello, Joe?
Oh, I'm still here. Are you still here?
Yes, sir. Okay. I guess you didn't hear my break up there. Yeah, I was asking the difference between freeze frame and snapshot features.
Right. So the difference between the freeze frame and the snapshot feature, and we'll hear this in the interviews coming up, the way that some people look at freeze frame is that it's a part of the device. So when you take a picture, it stays on that device. You can't send it anywhere. You can't export it anywhere. When you turn off the unit, it's gone. It's not there anymore. So what ends up then happening is that if it was critical information, you weren't able to save it. So you'll have to copy it down on pen and paper, or run to the computer and type it in, or pull out a voice recorder and tell yourself a note of the stuff that's on the screen. Now, The snapshot is rather different. In the snapshot, you can actually take a picture of text, then save it on a memory card, and then have it for later review. And in some cases, you can actually take that image and put it on the computer so you can export it off that device. So there are a couple of units that allow you to do that. We'll hear about one of those tonight. And that can be a big thing. Another thing about the camera, and this is really, really weird, and we've seen this before, of course, in mobile phones. You'll recognize this, Michael, that in some jobs, you can't have video magnification that allows you to take a snapshot of any kind or a freeze frame of any kind. I worked with a woman a couple of years ago who worked at a nuclear facility, and she had to choose a unit that worked for her that had no freeze frame because it would be classified as a different device under the Department of Defense. So she had to choose a unit that had no freeze frame and no snapshot so she could use. And even then, she had to leave it at the facility. She couldn't carry it out because they had certain rules about cameras. And some employers do that with cell phones and other devices where they actually will not allow cell phones in at a certain place or no cameras past a certain place. There's even a side market, a third-party market that will actually remove the camera from your phone, especially if you're an iPhone user, that will actually let you have the camera, the phone back without the camera so you can go to work.
Very interesting. Yeah, I had seen that scenario come up before where photos are not allowed. That's a number. Utility companies, anything that could turn around and be posted on the internet, pose any kind of security breach, confidentiality. So something certainly to keep in mind.
Absolutely. It's another one of those strange things you wouldn't necessarily consider. Another point is, does it have a case? And does that case have a handle? And does that case have a belt clip? Like in the smaller variety, a lot of people want to know if they can be able to just hang that on their belt and be able to get to it when they need to, just like the old cell phones. Does it have a lanyard, the ability to carry it around your neck? That's important too. And again, that sounds really strange, but there are some people who may work in a warehouse and they may wear the device around their neck to be able to read things, again, spot reading really quick. And so these are little tips and tricks that you kind of get used to when looking at these devices to consider when moving forward to, because these things are kind of pricey. So when you're moving forward to choose one, you definitely want to take some of these ideas in hand in the case that, does it give me the right kind of colors and that maybe you like red and black. There are units out there that can actually let you have a red and black hue. And does it have the screen size that I want? That's really important because I'll be looking at this. And then like you talked about earlier with lighting and glare, if I go outside with this thing, am I able to read it? Am I able to read it in a room that's fluorescent and bright white institutional, or is that too much glare and I can't see it and I may need to put my hand around it to cover it to be able to see it a little better. So those are all important things to think about when considering getting a video magnifier in the smaller variety. When going to the larger one, though, like let's say past the midline, and again, the midline is like 7 to 12 inches, when going past that, it really does come down to, does it have a good durable case? Can I put this in a case on wheels if I need to? And there are units out there that are 23 pounds that are considered portable and actually run off batteries. They have a 17-inch screen, so you can actually fold it. And it's almost a regular desktop video magnifier that you can actually collapse down to. So some of that is a big issue when considering, do I want a laptop replacement kind of video magnifier replacement where I can go out and do these things with a smaller unit would work just as fine.
I tell you what, why don't we play these interviews and then we'll come back and that'll leave us time for questions from the participants. First, let's start with our interview here with Ted Judge, who's the product manager for the video product line at Humanware.
Okay, everyone, now we've got Mr. Ted Judge from Humanware. Ted, tell us where you are and what you do, my friend.
My name is Ted Judge. I'm the group brand manager for HumanWear for our low vision product. So HumanWear has a very broad range of products for low vision as well as for some blindness and braille. And I'm responsible for our low vision products, both handheld and desktop electronic magnifying solution.
Let's discuss the Nano first, if we could.
Sure. The Nano is our smallest unit. To some extent, I would say entry level, but it has fewer features and smaller and a little cheaper too, a little less expensive on the price side. 1.8 inch LCD screen, and you can change magnification on that screen from about 5 times up to 20 times. And it's a very small size. It's very similar size to almost a cell phone, about that. And it's very light, only about 4 ounces. So it's very easy to carry around. You can stick in your pocket, purse. It's always sort of there, very easy to get out and use and turn on quickly.
Yeah, the controls are very interesting in that you have the buttons on the face and then the little rocker switch on the side to be able to zoom in and zoom out. And the colors, that has multiple color schemes as well, doesn't it?
There's about 2 color schemes. There's really a color mode, and there's an inversed white on black mode for increased contrast to help with reading material. It's just got those 2, so it's a simpler device compared to some of their other ones.
And speaking of some of your other ones, let's talk about the Pocket.
Yeah, the Pocket is a little bigger, but by the name, it's still actually a very reasonable size, and we've called it the Pocket, and it pretty much does fit in most men's shirts pockets, and very easy to carry around as well. It has a small flip-out stand that allows you to easily put it on top of material, or you can also use the handle, that flip-out stand, to flip it around and hold it like a traditional magnifier, so you'd hold it out in your hand that way. It allows you to magnify from about 3 times up to 9 times. And on the front, there's very simple buttons, a plus and a minus to go up and down in magnification. And there's another button, again, very simple button, just to change from the different viewing modes, color mode, white on black, and a black on white. It is a very handy, easy product to carry around. Again, it's only about 4.9 ounces, so it's not really much heavier than the Nano, given that there's quite a bit of increased screen size available.
I believe that has a freeze frame too, doesn't it?
Yes. You can press the button and freeze the image, which is a very handy feature, especially if you're out shopping or something like that. And I know I'm not the tallest person in the world. And if there's a price or something like on a higher counter that you want to see, you can hold it up, press the freeze image, then bring it down to a convenient place to read. That's a very useful feature.
A lot of people don't like actually kind of looking downward into their video magnifier.
With it mounted on the stand, you can just turn it 90 degrees, and then you can quite easily use it to write underneath. You can hold your pen. You're not encumbered by the pen. You can sign a check with it.
Speaking of handles, let's talk about the Versa. The Versa has a handle and a little larger screen.
Yeah, the Versa has a 4.3-inch screen, so it's actually sort of a widescreen format, and it has a handle that sort of just flips out from the back, so you can hold it horizontally like that. Or if you want, you don't have to use the handle. You can use it flat on the table as well, and it provides magnification from 5 up to 15x. Again, it has a freeze frame like the Pocket and offers a few more, again, viewing modes. So you have full color, black and white, white, black, yellow, blue, and a yellow, black combination. So it allows for pretty much most combinations that most people would need and be comfortable with.
It's kind of more advanced, but this also has a removable battery, doesn't it?
It does, that's right, yeah. So you can easily take out the battery and change it or have a spare battery if you want to use it for a longer period of time.
That doesn't charge USB, but it looks like it has a USB connector, doesn't it?
Yes, it does have a USB port, not really for charging or anything. It's really for maintenance purposes. What it does have is a audio-visual port, and it comes with a included cable that allows you to hook it up to a television. You can actually use it as, I guess, the equivalent of a mouse magnifier. So you can hold it in your hand, have the cable going out, connect it to your television, and you get a much larger magnification on your television screen.
Well, you know, I wish it could do more, like maybe play MP3s. That's just the tip of the iceberg with the Versa Plus, isn't it?
Yeah, the Versa Plus basically has all the low magnification features of the Versa, but we've included the multimedia features such as listening to music and MP3s, as well as the ability to watch videos. So it comes with a small slot for an SD card, so you can put movies on that SD card, put music on it, and plug it in and turn it on, and you can watch or listen to any of those. It also has the ability to record little voice notes and things too. So if you're wanting to remember that you need to do something later on, you can take a quick note on your Versa, and then later on check what notes you'd left that day and say, oh, yes, I had to pick up that milk there.
It does that through a series of on-screen menus, right?
Yeah. there's basically a few more buttons on the Versa compared to the Versa Plus, and that just allows you to navigate through various menus. There's a magnifier menu, a music menu, a video playback menu. There's the voice recording one. The Versa allows you to actually take, not just freeze the image, but save the image. And with that saved image, you're able to actually pan and zoom on the unit, or transfer that image to your computer through the USB.
With that, you could essentially take down phone numbers or notes. Do you know the format in which that saves at?
It's just in a normal JPEG file. Once you've transferred to computer, any basic JPEG video or image viewing program will work. The really nice feature on when you are viewing the saved image on the Versa, it allows you to sort of pan and zoom, which means you may have captured the image and you really wanted to make it bigger. And if you made it bigger, maybe the information you want is in one corner and off the screen. So what you can do is sort of slide the part of the image that you're viewing over to that corner to get that information. So you could use that to capture a person's business card. And then later on, you could actually zoom around and magnify and get their name or their phone number or their telephone extension or something. Get the information that you really want out of that card, not just sort of the whole thing.
Now that still has the same thing with a battery like the Versa?
It has a rechargeable battery that lasts about 2.5 to 3 hours. It's removable battery. Has a headphone port, so you can plug in headphones, and it comes with a set of headphones. Little small speaker as well, so that you can listen to some things without even the headphone.
What do you recommend people should approach, not just your products, but video magnifiers in general? What do you think are some hints and tips somebody should be thinking of when they're holding on to one of these for the first time?
The important thing is to look at where a person will use the device and what are the things that they're really going to be looking at reading. Most handhelds basically are used for spot reading, or what we call spot reading. So it's reading labels, reading short things, phone numbers in a phone book or on a business card, or reading a menu. So the person really has to look at types of activities that they want to do with the device. And if you're really evaluating, the best thing is to do is bring along some of the things that you're actually going to use. Is it soup cans in the kitchen that somebody's going to be looking at? Well, bring along one of those to really evaluate and to make sure that the device works with the material that is most important for that person.
Ted Judge, I want to thank you for taking some time out and talking to us about your portable magnifier line. We really do appreciate coming on Saro Talk and Tech Chat.
You're very welcome. Been my pleasure.
Got on the line here today Mr. Mark Stenzel from Enhanced Vision, and when I was thinking of all the things that were out there in the world of portable video magnification, Enhanced Vision has been a leader for a while, and I wanted to bring Mark on here to talk a little bit about those products. Mark, thanks for joining us here today.
You're welcome. I'm very happy to have an opportunity to talk with you tonight.
Let's talk about the Max. Give a little bit of an overview of the Max, the size, and how that works.
First of all, Enhanced Vision has been in business 15 years, and the Max was one of our very first products introduced, I believe, in 1996. So it's been around a long time. It's well known. And as far as I'm aware, it was the first, or certainly one of the first, handheld digital magnifiers available. It hasn't changed too much over the years because the basic design was so good. But think of a mouse with a camera and a built-in light. That will give you a pretty good idea of what the Max looks like. It's connected via a cord to any TV, and it projects the image that it sees directly onto any TV screen or any computer monitor, for that matter. Magnification can be adjusted, and the absolute size that you will see on the screen is a function more of the size of the monitor than it is of the adjustable magnification, which is somewhat limited on the device. In other words, the larger the screen, the larger the magnification. Field of view, however, is fixed regardless of screen size, and Max is available in a both color and black and white version. The color is by far the more popular, and it has a suggested retail price of $449 for the color version.
Pebble, I've used the Pebble for years. There's a change to the Pebble. There's actually two now, Mark. Is that true?
Yes, that's right. The Pebble was introduced, the original version was introduced a few years ago. It is still available, and it had has a 3.5-inch screen. May of this year, I think it was in May, April or May, we introduced a new version, which is what we call Pebble 4.3, to indicate that it has a 4.3-inch screen versus the 3.5. They essentially work the same way. They have built-in rechargeable batteries, has a built-in screen, has a handle that can be pulled out so that you can use it as you would a traditional handheld magnifier. It is full color, it's autofocus, and you have the ability to not only change the magnification, but also you have actually three levels of magnification on 3.5. You have four levels on the 4.3. You can also do something that I think a lot of people appreciate, which is to freeze the image, which is to capture a picture for that moment in time, and then you can actually manipulate the size or the background or foreground. So how you might use the Pebble in that mode, so if you're in the store, you would capture, say, a price tag or the ingredients on a can of soup, and then bring that down in front of you, manipulate the size and the background so that you could read it. Then you press the button again, and it'll go back into a live mode. It does not store the image, but it will keep it there for as long as you need to see it at the moment of time. Pebble 3.5 is $545, and the 4.3 is $645. That's a great one for carrying around in your pocket. The handle is certainly helpful. That allows you to get greater flexibility or even tilt that. Speaking of tilting, what about the Amigo? That is a classic unit for students. Can you give it a little bit more about the Amigo?
The Amigo has been available for about 4.5 years. Very, very popular product. Has a 6.5-inch screen and has five levels of magnification. It also is full color, has different modes, which are simply the ability to change background and foreground. We actually upgraded the Amigo about a year ago to a full digital picture. It always had freeze frame, but we had the capability now to do what I described with Pebble, which is to freeze an image and then manipulate that image with respect to magnification and mode. On the tilting issue, yes, that's a good point. The Amigo is designed so it sits flat on the tabletop. It must be in contact with the reading material, so you don't hold it up to look around the room. You place it directly on the reading material, and the screen actually tilts towards you so that you can adjust it to an angle that's comfortable, so you don't have to be bent over, and you can sit for longer periods of time, relate to it at a much more comfortable angle, and that angle is changeable based on what the user would like. And that product has a suggested retail of $1,695.
Another thing that I like about the Amigo is that it has a removable battery and the video out. Those are two neat features that are kind of unique to it in the fact that you can swap out those batteries or even use that on a larger television. So if you're in a hotel room, which I've done before, I could read something on a larger screen if I needed to. And I also like the writing stand. That's always been very popular.
That's true, and it does have the video out for an external monitor. It does have writing capability. By the way, you get two batteries with that device so that you can have one charged up in your pocket. You'll get about 2 or 2.5 hours on a full charge. You could plug the device in and use it off of AC power as well, and or have an extra battery available. And by the way, with Pebble, I mentioned that both versions of the Pebble come with rechargeable AA batteries, and they can be recharged hundreds of times, and it comes not only with a power supply but also a charger, and some people carry around an extra set of charged batteries if they're going to be out for a full day so they don't run out of power. And the Amigo uses a more of a camcorder type battery, one that's available either from Enhanced Vision or you can get virtually any camera store. But you get batteries with the Pebble included. You actually get two batteries with the Amigo included in the price.
We were talking about tilting. Let's talk about flipping. The Flipper has been around for a while. He's had a couple of screen size changes, and he too has a removable battery. I've used that one before too. Can you give us a little bit more background information on the Flipper?
Sure. The Flipper has been around probably for about 10 years, unlike the Pebble, which is only about 2 years old, and the Amigo about four. But Flipper has been one of the early products that Enhanced Vision developed. It was a very successful product. To some extent, things like Amigo and Pebble and even our Acrobat LCD have taken over in some respects with the Flipper. But the idea behind that, it's a small camera connected either to an external monitor or what we call a panel. And we've sold it for years as Flipper Panel, first with a 10-inch monitor. About 2 years ago, we upgraded to a 12-inch monitor. And so that's a complete system that includes the camera, the panel, which is your display, a carry bag, which is actually like a backpack, which is included with the device. And what's nice about the Flipper is it is portable, so you can use it with a battery pack. Alternatively, you can plug it in, and it has the capability to look down at your reading material. And at the same time, and here's where the flip comes, you can flip it up and point it across the room to either look at somebody in another part of the room or look, as it's commonly used in a classroom, to look at things at the front of the room. You can then magnify. Of course, it's fully autofocus, full color. You can see what the teacher's doing, see what he or she has written up on the board as terms of notes or assignments, then you can flip it back down for reading print or writing notes. Flipper Panel as a complete system sells for $2,295. That's a complete system. If you don't need the panel, you have your own monitor, that's only $1,395. So a good deal of the cost is in the panel, which is special for us, and that includes the battery.
I've used that, like I said, in classroom environments. I've worked with people who are using that in meetings, and it also has a light on it that you can turn on and off. Helpful when you're in glary situations or if you're in darker situations where you're looking at a PowerPoint and you don't necessarily want the light to bother others. So if the lights are off, you can flip the camera light off, which makes life a little easier. One of the products that I'm really familiar with, and I think Enhanced Vision is known for, is going through a little bit of a metamorphosis. It might be the one that people know the company for. Can you talk a little bit about the Jordy, where he is and where he's going?
Jordy is also one of the company's original products, had its first incarnation, as I believe it was called, the VMAX. That was long before my career started here at Enhanced Vision, but I remember the VMAX. It was a helmet-type device. It evolved very quickly into the Jordy, as most people know it. Sleeker, lighter weight, more functional. The Jordy has been around almost since the start of the company. It uses a very unique and critical part that we learned from our supplier about a year ago was no longer going to be made available, and there was simply no more available in the world. Once we realized that, we had always intended to redesign the Jordy. We started that effort, but about 2 months ago, we actually announced that the Jordy would no longer be available. We only had a limited supply, and when they were gone, they were gone. We have stopped manufacturing it. There are still some in stock. There are some scattered around the country, so somebody absolutely has to have one. As of this moment, we can still supply them in small quantities. And we're kind of sorry to see it go because it is something that the company has been known for. But we do have a new design concept on the drawing board that we're working on, and we expect sometime next year to have more information and perhaps a new product out that will be smaller, it will be sleeker, it will be less weight, and it will be a little less obtrusive than, I think, the Jordy. One of the issues with acceptance of the product was that you had to be able to tolerate something on your head, and that wasn't always easy for everyone, and we were very much aware of that, and we're looking to keep that in mind in the redesign. Price used to be on the Jordy about $2,800. Our new version probably will be less, perhaps by a significant amount, which will also make it, I think, more accessible for people who want a device of that nature.
It always amazed me the types of people that use that device. I knew people who were jewelry makers, did watch repair. There was a gentleman who actually worked, had an oil rig working in his yard, and he could actually use the Jordy to look up without having to climb on the ladder to see where his gauges were. It always fascinated me the vocations that people used the Jordy in to help them, because it was so versatile that you could look at something far away and then move the slider across and look at a clipboard right there in front of you.
Certainly an amazing product that enabled many, many people to work, go to school, and continue their hobbies, and we're still committed to head-mounted technology, and we will have more to say about that in 2011. They can always get a demonstration of our product just by calling them. So they call. We have representatives around the country so that they can see the various products before they actually have them purchase. There's also a 30-day money-back guarantee.
And Mark, I want to really thank you for taking time out to talk to us today about your product lines. You can head over to the Enhanced Vision website at enhancedvision.com.
Okay. Well, thanks, Joe. Two great interviews there. We've enabled questions, and I want to ask you one thing, Joe. I kept hearing the term, magnify 3x to 9x or 5x to 15x, and I wonder if it's kind of like enlarging the computer screen where there comes a point of diminishing return. So what's reasonable amount of magnification?
That is an awesome question. It can depend on the eye condition. So if somebody has what's called field limitations, that would be like taking a piece of paper and taking a pen and poking a hole in it. If they have that very small field, then magnifying something larger can be a problem. So think of it like having a very small field and a riding lawnmower. It might be too much, so you might need a push mower instead. But for a very large acre of land, then the riding lawnmower may work out a little better. And by that I mean, if you have a smaller screen and you have very little vision in your field, then that might work out a little better. What usually happens, and I've seen it time and time again, is let's get this guy a 40-inch monitor. Well, here's this poor guy trying to see the 40-inch monitor with his little push mower. So he's trying to mow that whole acre of land with a little mower, and it's just not possible. It actually will make things rather more difficult than it would in other situations. So the magnification can act the same way. When you enlarge text to 2, 4, 6, 8, what have you, you are making the text bigger, but you're seeing less around you. And you can actually increase it to such a way that you may only see one word or a few letters at a time. And that is still good because there are some people out there that go, oh, I can still see the letter E. I can see. It's a little bit of denial going on there, but I don't want to get into that tonight. But what it ends up happening doing is it actually lets that person move slower because there's no way you can possibly get all that information in a timely and efficient manner. That's when you start talking about using OCR and speech and screen readers and being able to work things a little faster, because reading print at that level can be so, so slow. So that is a really good question. When you're looking at this kind of thing, you want to consider, can I see this at a very minimal magnification? Can I get at least 4 or 5 words on the screen at one time? And if that means I have to use a larger screen to be able to do that, that might work out a little better for you.
Are there any magnifiers that are better suited for people who know that their vision is gradually deteriorating and that over a 2-3 year period they're ultimately going to lose the remaining vision? Or is that really a case by case, or like you said, it depends on the type of disease?
Well, it does depend on the type of disease. Certainly people with retinitis pigmentosa are facing an issue of the fields I talked about. So are people with diabetes, diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, like myself. My fields are getting smaller as I lose, and so that can be a big issue. Glare can be a big issue. The other part of that that can happen is we all age, and what can end up happening is that your eye tends to change around your 40s, and it's a muscle. So where you might not have had issues before, or let's say you have an eye condition now, as you reach your 40s, you will start to notice that your vision will change, and that might affect the way you look at a video magnifier. A long time ago, I had a gentleman once say to me, I guess you've been using video magnifiers long enough to understand that it looks a little better color-wise on the monitor than it does going outside. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. And later that I realized that when you're looking at a video magnifier, you're staring into the light. When you go outside and you look at a beautiful red Corvette, that's light coming down from the sky and reflecting off of the red Corvette. When you look at a picture of the red Corvette on a screen, you're staring into the light. And some eye conditions respond better to direct light. Some eye conditions respond better to contrast. Again, the colors are being presented in a much brighter and vibrant way. So those individuals tend to like the screen and they grow used to it. Then there are other people, like you said, with the different eye conditions that have to see it with white text on a black background or yellow on black, because that's all the photoreceptors in their eyes will allow them to have in order to concentrate on the text in front of them.
So that would be important for them to look at some of these that allow certain types of foreground, background displays. My other question has to do with eye strain. Can either overuse of certain magnifiers or improper use of magnifiers cause eye strain and fatigue?
Absolutely. When we were talking earlier about glare and things like that, and I mentioned squinting, there are some people who decide, I really just don't want this 12 or 15 inch screen to carry with me from class to class. I'm going to try and get by with a 3 or a 5. They then find themselves struggling and giving themselves eye strain because it wasn't enough, or they've used it for a longer period of time. We heard earlier in the interviews about spot reading, and these are not necessarily set to do something for a long period of time. So again, and this my mileage does vary, so I'll say this, that some people may find one versus the other, but reading the Versa for a long period of time is a little different than reading the Amigo, and that's why we talked about the handle and tilting. Can you sit comfortably with it? You know, can I read this for a longer period of time? And there's also a difference in screen size there. You know, the Amigo's a little larger and a little bulkier, but for some people in class, as Mark said, it sits on the paper. That might not work for them. So they might like the handle of another product, like the Pebble, where you can actually raise it and tilt it and see it, or move your head closer to it, or have the unit move closer to you so you don't have to move your head. That can all come into play because subconsciously we tend to move closer or further away as low vision people to see something, and we don't necessarily recognize how far away we are from the materials or how far away we are from our heads from the screen. So we can do untold damage by forcing ourselves trying to read the back of the CD case.
So what types of tasks should a magnifier absolutely never be used for?
Wow.
I think
that's
we could say
question.
Driving, right? I mean,
yeah. You know, there used to be a thing on the Geordi that when you started it, it said not for driving. And I believe it says it in the box as well. Because with the Geordi, it was really interesting because it was one camera and it was on two lenses. So you had no depth perception. And so you had to be very careful when walking or moving. And like he was discussing earlier, Mark was, about the first one was a helmet. They found that that was very disorienting. So later in the Geordi's lifespan, they changed it so you could always look down at your feet, like at the planetarium. So if you felt kind of sick, you could always get something to lock onto. That is really important. What you will find is in some video magnifiers, they don't work well on reading something that's super reflective. So something like a bag of Orida potatoes fresh out of the freezer is going to have frost on it, and it's going to reflect back, and it's going to be hard to see. It's going to be very hard for you to read things in a rapid environment. So if you have to look over something rather quickly, and you can't necessarily build up a repetition to know, okay, I want to put this in the middle of this page to be able to get this information critically and fast, that may be a problem. It may require some memorization. The other thing that I could say that I've seen people have difficulty with is trying to read the backs of like circuit diagrams or try to see the inside of computers. There are some units out there that are a little better than that, that allow you to kind of peer into things. But close quarters, cramped quarters, reading something that's electrical because you're holding an electrical device can cause a problem. And you want to think about that when you're working on some things. Another one, oddly enough, food service. These are cameras. They're exposed. So you want to be careful that you're not getting grease or moisture or other things trapped behind or in the unit itself that can cause some damage and cause it not to work right. And another one that you wouldn't normally think is carpentry. There are guys who have trouble using video magnifiers with carpentry because the way that a video magnifier works is that it kind of tends to, let's say it's if it's something round like a soup can, you'll be able to see three or four letters at a time until you rotate the can and get more letters under it. So it would be cream, mushroom. Oh, mushroom. I see M. I see the M, so that we're getting close. So reading something that's round can be very difficult. But at the same time, it also does work well for people who are doing, work around the house and cleaning the house and making sure you've picked up the right cleaner, or you need to read something on the back if there's something of directions, or reading your medicines. That's very critical in order to make sure that you've got the right prescription. And video magnifiers can help you do that.
Hopefully there's not such a thing as planned obsolescence, but what is the realistic life expectancy of these magnifiers?
You know, there are some that I have seen. The original Pocket Viewer from Humanware was around for a very long time. It was very durable. Let me correct that. The original one was very unique. You had to actually pinch it on the sides to get it to come on. But the second one, that's the one I'm thinking of, that was kind of tan and had two buttons on it, was very popular for a very long time. What can happen, as we heard with Mark, it really breaks down to the availability of parts. Some of these are special molded. Some of these are cast a certain way. And when the cost for making those or making another production run becomes too much, or they're just not available anymore, as we heard with the Geordi, fire. And of course, that's no small feat at the prices that we heard about tonight. So generally, I would say that I've seen some units, you know, still running that came out in 2004. But I would have to say that maybe you're looking at 5 to 7, maybe 10 years maximum, because these are portable units. You're going to take it around. You're going to bang it around. It's going to be sitting in a purse or in a desk, or, you know, you really are using it. These guys get a lot of wear. And that's another reason why we talked about thinking about the durability of the product and can it take a pounding where you're going to go. And it gets back to the task that we talked about earlier, where maybe I need something that's a little bit more rugged if I'm having to go cross campus.
Are there certain environmental elements we should try to avoid, like dust or sand at the beach or extreme humidity or extreme heat or extreme cold?
Yeah, a lot of those are actually written in the manuals. One of the things that a lot of people forget to do is read their manuals. A lot of video magnifiers have their manuals online, so you could read them with a screen reader or screen magnification. They do come with cleaning cloths that you could use. There is care instructions, and if you're not sure, you can always call the manufacturer themselves and double check on what is the right way to clean the screen or clean the camera. Certainly larger screens, they're portable. You might get your fingers on it. You might actually, those of you who have iPads know this very well, you might actually smudge it a little bit, and so you want to make sure that you're using the correct cleaning care products or cleaning in the right direction when having to take care of this unit, because it is your eyes in certain ways, so you want to be very careful what you do with it. That being said, you're still going to have real world uses, and you know, you want to avoid being by the pool, Michael. You want to avoid being by other
places. They're not waterproof?
No, I'm afraid not. I'm waiting for that. Maybe we'll get that out of this podcast. Somebody will make a waterproof video magnifier. But you know, you want to avoid certain places where you're going to run into that. Going from hot to cold, especially this winter, you'll get that condensation on a camera. And that may cause you to think, oh, my vision's gone worse. And really all it is that you just needed to clean the camera or maybe wipe down the screen. And you know, it was really interesting when people would go to use this. I would always be amazed by the person that I was working with because eyes are so different. Somebody would sit there and go, there's a dead pixel on this device. And I would have to go, really? Because my vision wasn't strong enough to recognize that they would see that. Also, the refresh rates of some of the video magnifiers are kind of slow. So when you're reading text rather rapidly, and if you have a lot of residual vision left, you may notice a smearing effect, or like I called it, the etch-a-sketch effect, where it couldn't draw the pixels fast enough. So if you still had a lot of remaining vision, you would notice the defects in the technology. And so using regular handheld magnifiers, you know, the ones that are on glasses, you just use a light to be able to allow you to read rather than an electronic screen, may work out better for you because, you know, you don't have the pixelation that you would have in a video magnifier.
Okay, again, if anyone has any questions, please submit them here. We'll have Joe answer them. Is there any kind of resale market? Let's say someone has their vision has deteriorated to a point that the original magnifier they bought is of no use to them, or they've totally lost their eyesight, but they've only had it a year or two, and they know it's in good shape. I mean, are there any vendors who will resell them, or are you pretty much on your own to put it out on eBay, or is there any market there? Or maybe someone is just financially strapped and just needs to buy one used just to be able to afford it.
There are some local vendors that will take them back. Sadly, a large population that would fall into this category are the elderly, and the family may have purchased it for them to be able to read the newspaper or correspond with their family members, and only a short few years later, person has passed away. So there's no need for that device. That's where you will usually find them at Goodwill, eBay, Craigslist, pawn shops. Again, that's another one of those where you still want to try before you buy if you can seriously help it, because it may be a great deal, but it may be like you're putting on a pair of shoes that are two sizes too small. And that's where you want to be conscious of the price, but also does it still allow you to do the things that you need to do? With that said, there are also turnovers in inventory. So just like in a car situation, last year's model might be a little cheaper, or a demo might be a little cheaper. So you might want to contact your local dealer of video magnifiers in your area and see if they have some units that are still good, probably still under warranty, that may be a little bit more affordable than the current top of the line.
Mounts, magnifiers work that you plug into a TV or an LCD screen?
Asking about the mounts. Okay, you hear it. Okay.
Yeah, I heard that one. Yeah, they do. You can use them like the Macs that we heard about earlier. Those do work. It does depend on the size of the screen that we're looking at. So that may be an issue. Is it a CRT versus an LCD? Because in some cases, some newer televisions are starting to not have composite cabling, and that could be a problem. The other issue that you have is that whenever you want to read, you got to go find a television. So that's really great for somebody who's traveling, again, in a hotel, or somebody who always has access to a monitor. But if you're in the grocery store, that's where you really need a more self-contained unit where you have a screen and a camera. Very good question, though.
Well, I'm looking at an interesting concept, interfacing with the television to...
by Carson, and it plugs into an LCD. Thank you for your answer.
Okay.
Oh no, not a problem. And there's nothing wrong with that. Finding out what works best for you is always the important one. And if that's what you can afford and it works for you, by all means, go for it.
That's a good question, because I had that discussion with Jeffrey Stark that certain visual impairments, people can actually see the CRTs better than the LCD screens.
Mm-hmm. Glaucoma. So, I was the same way. I actually saw the CRT a lot better than LCD. I kind of fought kicking and screaming to leave the big 22, you know, radiation emitting CRT on my desk to move to the more slimmer, and my wife approves LCD on the screen. And that does happen in a lot of cases, because the way that the tone of light is, it's softer for some people, whereas the more direct lighting of the CRT, again, it's that gun shooting light right at your eye, is incredibly bright, and people tend to respond better to that. And some people would even tell you that the brightness gives them better contrast.
I want to mention before we close here in the next 5 minutes that coming up the next two Tech Chats, on the 23rd, we're going to begin our first career focus segment. This one, we're going to talk about working in the broadcasting industry. If you've been thinking about going into radio, or maybe you've worked in radio before, you're just interested in it, as a hobby, want to find out what does it take to work in broadcasting. It can be done, but it is very different from when I did it in the 80s and 90s. But we'll be speaking with SAMNET member Tate Luck, who worked for The Way, which is a Christian-based network of stations based in Florida and covering the Midwest, and I'm not sure how many states now. And he's also was program director in Columbus, Ohio. And we'll bring in one or two other folks currently working in the broadcast industry to talk about the way it works today with computers and voice tracking, and now the importance of understanding and using social networking. So the whole vehicle has changed. We'll talk about the new PPMs, the personal people meter that they use now instead of the old school Arbitron diaries, and just a lot of good stuff about radio. We'll have a lot of good resources for those interested in that. That's coming up on the 23rd. Then on September 30th, it's going to be our first kind of, what are we calling it, this month in Access Technology, or really we're going to look at Q3 and kind of look at the latest developments in both Access Technology and mainstream technology. The Blio with 1 million books is supposed to be out on the 28th. If that is, we'll certainly be talking about that. And there's a few other interesting things. A few new digital recorders like the Zoom H1, Olympus DM4, new browsers, three new browsers, all playing havoc with accessibility, the new IE9 in beta for Vista and Windows 7 only. So Vista, you've got the latest Internet Explorer you're going to get. Also a new Firefox that's broken accessibility. I think NVDA is the only one working with the latest beta of that particular 4.0, so hopefully before it comes out. And, of course, a new Google Chrome, which NVDA and System Access are working with yet, but not enough that we can offer official support. But so some very interesting developments. We'll be talking about all of that and much more on the 30th. Joe, we're down to our final 90 seconds. Any final closing comments, anything that we didn't cover, things people to keep in mind as they make that important decision of getting their first or maybe updating to a newer, more modern video magnifier?
Well, we used the term video magnifier a lot tonight, and we haven't used the term CCTV, and that's because the industry is stepping away from that. CCTV generally refers to closed-circuit television, which is more seen in security systems, like especially our listeners in England or Europe really know that for because they have CCTV cameras all over the place that are on poles and monitoring and that kind of thing. So if you do a Google search on CCTV, you won't see that much on video magnification. So to separate themselves out, you want to look for video magnifiers, video magnification, and you want to look at the different options that we have talked about tonight. And in October, we'll come back at this and we'll discuss desktop video magnifiers and PC access. And some of those actually have OCR components to them. So they're more than just video magnifiers. So we'll talk about this. It's a little complex and we couldn't do it into one show. So we'll do this and we'll do it again. And maybe we'll even talk about it with users. We'll see what you guys think. Those are using video magnification.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Joe. You've offered a lot of good information. We will be following up with other topics, larger display options for those who need that, or more stationary. So I think we covered some good bases here. I hope the information has been useful. Joe will be in Houston next week. I will be in Indianapolis, but we will be doing the broadcast Career Focus. If you have topics you'd like to see us cover on Tech Chats, either career focuses or other important technical issues, now that Joe and I are working as a team, we can cover more ground, and we're very excited to do so. Please send us your suggestions. Email resources@serotalk.com. That's resources@serotalk.com. Joe, thanks for all your great information, and we will see you next week on the 23rd as we talk about radio and all that cool stuff.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.